Welcome to the podcast series of Kohan Textile Journal, a leading textile media platform in Middle East and Africa. So today, we're going on a deep dive into something that's, well, it's a massive shift in the global market.
Yeah, it's one of those things that really changes how you see the entire industry.
Right. And, you know, to set this up, I want you to imagine for a second that you are a world-class baker.
Okay, a baker.
Yeah. Like, you've spent generations perfecting your craft. Mm-hmm. You grow the absolute best wheat. You harvest it at the exact right moment. But instead of taking that wheat and baking your incredible bread, you just sell the raw flour.
Right.
For pennies.
Yeah.
And this is the kicker. You walk down to the market and you buy back the beautifully baked, packaged bread made from your own flour, but at a massive premium.
I mean, it sounds completely absurd when you put it like that.
It really does. You are doing all the groundwork and just like letting someone else capture all the profit.
Yeah. And it is a painful reality when you frame it that way, because,
yeah,
you know, you are looking at raw material excellence, mm-hmm, where the actual financial value is realized like an ocean away.
Exactly. Which brings us to our mission for today's deep dive. We are unpacking the African cotton revolution.
And it really is a revolution.
It is. We are looking at this massive, incredibly ambitious strategic pivot happening right now among the leading African cotton producers, specifically the C4 Plus Group and Cameroon.
Yeah, the heavy hitters.
Right. We're talking about a move from being, you know, just raw agricultural exporters to becoming vertically integrated industrial powerhouses.
Which is huge.
It's massive. And this evolution is fueled by a $12 billion investment plan, plus some very tight, very aggressive 2030 goals.
What is so fascinating here is the psychological and strategic shift. Because for a long time, you know, the standard playbook was simply advocating for fairer global trade rules.
Like just asking for a better deal.
Exactly. Just going to the negotiating table. But now we're seeing a shift to them rolling up their sleeves and actually rebuilding the domestic industrial ecosystem from the ground up.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a transition from, like I said, asking for a better deal to physically building a better reality on the ground.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to really understand the brilliance and honestly the sheer necessity of this solution, we have to look at the scale of the current imbalance.
Yeah, you really need the context to get why this matters so much.
Right. And this takes us to a recent high-level meeting held alongside the WTO's 14th ministerial conference. This was in Yaoundé, Cameroon, right around April 1st, 2026.
Yeah, and the key players driving this conversation there are known as the C4 Plus Group.
Right, I heard of them.
So that is Benin, Burkina Faso, Mali, Chad, and Cote d'Ivoire.
Right.
For anyone following global textiles, you know, these nations are the heavyweights of cotton production in the region.
Yeah, heavyweights might be an understatement, honestly. When you look at the output of just this specific region, the numbers are just staggering.
They really are.
Like, they produce over 1 million tons of cotton annually. That is nearly half of the entire continent's total output, 1 million tons.
It's a massive amount of raw material.
It is. But then, and this is where you hit the statistic that absolutely floored me. So Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala pointed out at this conference that approximately 98% of this cotton is exported in its raw form.
Yeah, 98%.
98%. Like, you harvest a million tons and almost all of it just goes right out the door to a port.
It's wild.
It is. Why has it historically been this way? Like, how does a region get locked into a cycle where they are bleeding out almost all of the economic potential of their own crop?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it really comes down to the architecture of the global economy. I mean, for over 20 years, African cotton producers were stuck fighting global trade imbalances.
This is an uphill battle, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Specifically, they were fighting against subsidies in major producing countries outside of Africa. When other countries heavily subsidize their cotton farmers, it artificially lowers the global price of raw cotton.
Oh, I see. So the African farmers who are competing on the open market without those massive government safety nets, they're forced to sell a superior product at rock bottom prices just to get it off their hands.
That is exactly the trap. And, you know, when you are constantly selling your primary resource at a depressed price, you never accumulate the massive capital surplus required to build the infrastructure needed to actually process it.
Right, because building a factory isn't cheap.
Not at all. A modern spinning mill or an industrial dye house requires an enormous upfront capital expenditure. Ah. You simply cannot build that infrastructure if your agricultural sector is barely breaking even on the harvest.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, and progress on changing those global trade rules through the WTO was so glacial, you know, they finally realized they needed a completely new playbook.
Because if fighting the global trade rules for two decades didn't work, you just have to rewrite your own rules.
Exactly.
If you cannot get a fair price for the raw material on the global market, you stop selling the raw material. You keep it, and you build the factories yourself.
Yeah, the strategy is actually formalized in something called the Partnership for Cotton, which launched back in 2024.
Okay.
The goal of this partnership is to establish a credible working investment framework between 2026 and 2030. It is really about actively linking the agriculture side with full-scale manufacturing and export-oriented textile production.
Let's talk about the price tag on this blueprint, because stakeholders estimate they need a $12 billion investment over the next decade.
That is the number being thrown around, yeah.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because $12 billion is a colossal undertaking.
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge sum.
Right. And I want to try and visualize what that money practically looks like on the ground. Because, for our audience, you know, dropping $12 billion into a region isn't just about building a few warehouses.
No, not at all.
Are we talking about engineering an entirely new supply chain from scratch?
We are talking about engineering a fully integrated industrial ecosystem. I mean, this investment has to physically bridge the gap between a harvested cotton boll and a finished packaged garment ready for retail export.
Which is a huge gap.
It's massive.
Yeah.
And as you know, that is incredibly capital intensive. You were talking about developing high-tech spinning capabilities, modern ring spinning frames, massive climate-controlled facilities just to manage humidity for yarn strength.
Wow.
Yeah. And then you move into textile manufacturing, you know, the looms, the wet processing.
And wet processing alone is a massive hurdle. Like, you need industrial-scale water treatment facilities just to handle the dyeing and finishing safely.
Exactly the point.
Yeah.
Jean-Marie Pagham emphasized that the core objective here is to, quote, move up the value chain and unlock greater economic returns.
Right.
This isn't just about the commodity of cotton. It is a macroeconomic play. I mean, when you build out spinning textiles and garments, you are absorbing a massive workforce.
You're creating jobs.
Tons of jobs. You are transitioning hundreds of thousands of workers from informal agricultural labor into formal industrial employment. You are quite literally reshaping the regional economy from the ground up.
But $12 billion is just a number on a piece of paper until a government actually starts pouring concrete and laying foundation.
Right. Execution is everything.
And that is exactly why looking at Cameroon right now is so fascinating. They hosted these Yaoundé talks, and they are aggressively pursuing this exact blueprint today.
Yeah. For Cameroon, hosting these discussions wasn't just administrative. It represents a major diplomatic an economic stake in the ground.
Making a statement.
Exactly.
Right.
The government is actively seeking to position the country as the regional processing and logistics hub. They are leveraging their growing cotton production and their industrial ambitions to basically signal to international markets that they will be the center of gravity for this revolution.
And the domestic numbers actually support that momentum. Like, the state-owned producer, Sode Coton, didn't just have a decent year. They posted revenues of 223.35 billion CFA francs in 2024.
Which is a very strong showing.
It is. That underscores just how vital the sector already is to their economy, and it proves there is already significant capital flowing through the system.
Definitely.
And the trade minister, Luc Magloire Mbarga Atangana, has essentially identified cotton as the central pillar for their entire industrialization push. But I have to say, it is their 2030 moonshot goals that really made me pause.
Yeah, the growth projections are incredibly steep. I mean, they are projecting production to reach 350,100 tons in 2025.
Okay.
But the long-term target is aiming for 600,000 tons annually by 2030.
Let's pause on that figure, because here is the truly vital part of that goal. They have a mandate of at least 50% local processing by 2030.
Yes.
Wait, stop there. They want to go from processing roughly 2% of their cotton to processing 50% of 600,000 tons in just under 4 years.
That is the stated goal, yes.
I'm sorry, but how is that physically possible? The permitting and construction for a single modern textile facility can take years.
It's a huge timeline crunch.
It's like a local coffee shop deciding they are going to roast, package, and distribute half of an entire city's coffee supply starting tomorrow morning. It is a massive, almost unprecedented leap in infrastructure.
It is a staggering leap, I totally agree. But it makes more sense when you realize this timeline is deeply integrated into their broader economic vision.
How so?
Well, if you look at Cameroon's National Development Strategy for 2020 to 2030, It places textiles, garments, and leather industries right at the center of their structural transformation.
Ah, okay.
This isn't a side project being managed by one small department. It is the core engine for their entire economic future.
So they are throwing the full weight of the state behind it.
Yes, exactly. The National Villainous Strategy has very specific objectives that contextualize this push. They obviously want to increase domestic processing capacity.
Sure.
But they also want to expand the textile manufacturing infrastructure, strengthen local consumption of cotton-based products so they aren't purely reliant on volatile export markets, and critically, boost the share of manufacturing in the nation's overall GDP.
Which means moving away from the vulnerabilities of an agrarian economy.
Precisely.
And to be fair to their timeline, we are already seeing tangible proofs of this. A major industrial project has already been announced, backed by an investment of 180 billion CFA francs, which is designed to process 12,000 tons per year.
Right.
That is a massive injection of capital, like a real physical footprint, proving that this shift is underway.
And that facility serves as the ultimate proof of concept. I mean, if you can successfully stand up a facility processing 12,000 tons, you create the blueprint to scale up to that 50% mandate.
To prove it can be done.
Exactly. You prove to the international investment community, the ones holding that $12 billion, that the infrastructure can work in the region, that the labor force is capable, and that the financial returns are real.
So what does this all mean? We have laid out an incredibly optimistic and ambitious roadmap.
Very ambitious.
The macroeconomic vision is there. The initial capital is starting to flow. The raw material is unarguably some of the best in the world. But we have to bring this conversation back down to earth and look at the friction.
Yeah, we have to look at reality.
Because there are severe structural hurdles standing in the way of this boom.
Ambition is essential, sure. But a policy paper doesn't automatically pave roads or keep a dye house running.
No, it does not. Let's talk about those bottlenecks. First, you have high energy and production costs.
Always a huge issue.
Running spinning mills and advanced looms takes an enormous amount of reliable electricity. If your power grid is inconsistent, like if you have a brownout in the middle of a continuous spinning operation, your production line stops, yarn breaks, and your costs just skyrocket.
It's a nightmare for efficiency.
Second, there are profound infrastructure and logistics constraints. Moving finished goods to port, or even moving heavy, highly sensitive machinery into the country to build the factories in the first place, isn't easy without the right roads, railways, or modern port facilities.
Yeah, and you also have to factor in the current limited industrial capacity. I mean, you are essentially asking a workforce, a management class, and a governmental administrative system to jump several stages of industrial evolution in a very compressed time frame.
Right. You can't just skip steps.
Going from agriculture to advanced manufacturing requires specialized training, technicians, and engineers that you cannot just conjure overnight.
And finally, the ever-present financing gaps and investment risks.
Always the biggest hurdle.
Right, because getting $12 billion pledged on paper at a summit in Yaounde is one thing. Getting $12 billion deployed efficiently on the ground without getting bogged down in red tape is an entirely different universe.
Completely different.
So I have to wonder to myself, if you have the cotton and you have the vision, but your power grid drops out or your supply chains flood during the rainy season, doesn't this entire master plan just stall out?
This raises an important question, and it's exactly why this transition is so precarious. Success is not guaranteed, simply because the cotton is growing in the fields and the political will is there. Transforming a sector like this requires a highly coordinated, almost perfectly synchronized effort.
Like a ballet.
Honestly. Yes, you cannot just build the factory and hope the power grid catches up 2 years later. Governments, private investors, and industry stakeholders have to solve these bottlenecks simultaneously.
Wow, all at once.
Yeah. The government has to build the road at the exact same time the private sector is building the mill, while the banks are structuring the financing and the technical schools are training the mechanics.
It's like trying to build an airplane while you are already flying it, but you also have to mine the aluminum yourself.
That's a great way to put it.
The level of parallel execution required is just mind-boggling.
It is highly precarious. But if they can execute, you know, if they can keep those parallel tracks moving together, the payoff is generational.
It changes everything.
The Yaounde initiative marks a genuine turning point. African cotton is no longer just being viewed as a burden of global trade inequality to be argued over at the WTO. It is actually being viewed as a strategic industrial asset capable of driving massive regional integration.
We have traced the path of African cotton today from a raw commodity historically exported for pennies on the dollar to the centerpiece of a $12 billion industrial revolution.
A huge journey.
We have seen how the C4 Plus Group and Cameroon are shifting from fighting unfair global subsidies to building their own spinning mills, their own textile plants, and really taking control of their own economic destinies.
And as we wrap up, I want to leave you with a ripple effect that wasn't explicitly front and center at the summit, but is absolutely critical to ponder for anyone in the broader textile space.
Oh, I like where this is going.
If the C4 Plus Group and Cameroon actually succeed in their mission, if they are processing 50% or more of their raw cotton locally by 2030, what happens to the rest of the world?
Oh, that is a fascinating angle, because the global market is entirely adapted to the 98% raw export reality.
Exactly. Think about the massive global fast fashion hubs in other parts of the world. Entire manufacturing industries currently rely on the assumption that they will always have uninterrupted access to cheap, raw African fiber.
Wow. Yeah.
If that fiber is suddenly kept at home, spun into yarn in Yaoundé, woven into fabric in Cotonou, and sewn into garments in Bamako, those global hubs face a massive supply shock.
A total disruption.
Will we see a complete power shift in the global textile supply chain?
It really makes you wonder what happens to the global market when the baker finally decides to keep their own flour. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. It's been an absolute pleasure unpacking this with you. Until next time, keep exploring.